Well, this is the start of day 9 of the federal government shutdown. How's that working for us? And with the deadline to raise the debt ceiling approaching next week, President Obama held a news conference yesterday to put some pressure on House Republicans to pass legislation to fund the government and raise the debt limit without that provision to delay or defund the Affordable Care Act. He said he would be willing to talk about federal spending after that.
There are enough reasonable Republicans and Democrats in the House who are willing to vote yes on a budget that the Senate has already passed. That vote could take place today. Shutdown would be over.
Meanwhile, House Speaker John Boehner and Republicans stepped up calls for face-to-face negotiations with Democrats and President Obama.
All we're asking for is to sit down and have a discussion and to bring fairness, reopen the government, and bring fairness to the American people under Obamacare. It's as simple as that.
So Republicans blame Democrats for the shutdown. Democrats blame Republicans for the shutdown. Who do you blame and why? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 9th. We will do more this hour than play the blame game. We will talk with guests about why they think their side in this debate is important to the country. And we will also see if they see a solution in sight. And if there will be a solution by next week's deadline to raise the debt ceiling and what that might look like. And we hope you will join in with your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Harry Stein, Associate Director of Fiscal Policy for the Center for American Progress, a progressive think tank in Washington. He used to work as a legislative assistant to Democratic U.S. Senator Herb Kohl and is a graduate of UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us, and welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio.
Thank you.
And we also have with us Tom Giovanetti. He is president of the Institute for Policy Innovation, a conservative think tank in Dallas. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being back with us. So let's start by getting each of your opening statements. That's what we usually do during this big question. Harry Stein, you first. Why are you pointing the finger at the Republicans for this government shutdown and the situation we're in right now?
Sure. Well, I think the best place to start is earlier this year. How did we get here? And what happened earlier this year is we had both the House and the Senate pass their budgets. The House passed their latest version of the Ryan budget, and the Senate passed a budget written by Senator Patty Murray, who's the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. And then what you're supposed to do after that is you go to a conference committee, a joint House-Senate negotiation, and work out the differences, and that sets the framework for the year. Now, Democrats tried 19 times to start those negotiations, and every time Republicans objected, they blocked going to conference. Now, I think there are a number of Republicans, I don't want to point the finger at all Republicans, because I think there were a lot of Republicans who looked forward to those negotiations, who had been calling for them, but unfortunately, those voices were drowned out, and we didn't get any budget negotiations during the year. Instead, what we got was then the government shuts down now because there haven't been any negotiations. And now we have a group of Republicans, mostly in the House, demanding unilateral concessions before it's reopened, as if just opening the government is a concession somehow to the president or to Democrats in Congress.
All right. Tom, why do you blame President Obama and the Democrats?
Oh, I don't mean to throw you a curve, Joy, but I only partially blame the Democrats and President Obama. There's no question that the Republicans have sort of been the forcing function here. And I agree with Harry's characterization of what should be regular order in Congress, although I think it's a bit of a fantasy that Harry describes Senator Reid as this guy who just loves to sit down and negotiate with Republicans. Harry Reid has been one of the most intransigent leaders of the Senate in recent history. But there's no question that it is Republicans who realized early on that there simply is too great a gap. There is simply no room to negotiate a budget between the demands of Harry Reid in the Senate and what Republicans are trying to do in being responsive to their constituency. The gap is just too great. And that's why we've been operating now for several years on continuing resolutions. You know, success in Congress is the two sides sit down, compromise, agree to a budget, and pass it, and that they pass the regularly scheduled appropriation bills on time. That's success. A CR, a continuing resolution, is a failure, which is why it's a little bit jarring to me to hear President Obama demanding a CR as if that is the right way to approach things. And the president has rejected what he calls a piecemeal approach. And you have to sort of laugh at that if you know anything about Congress, because what the president derides as a piecemeal approach is regular order in Congress. It's passing the appropriations bills, the separate bills, to fund the government.
Well, let's talk a little, Harry, that Speaker Boehner says that all Republicans want is to have this conversation with President Obama about Obamacare and deficit reduction. The president says he'll negotiate later when there's not a government shutdown or the threat of default. Why not come to the table now and just work something out?
Well, I don't think it should be characterized that Democrats either in the Senate or the House or President Obama have refused to negotiate to reopen the government. What they've done is they've said, look, let's keep the government open for 6 weeks at the current low spending levels, which are so low that they're well lower than the Senate Democratic budget. It's not what Democrats support. In fact, this was actually a proposal that was originally made by Speaker Boehner to say, look, let's keep the government open and let's have this debate over health care reform. The Democrats passed that continuing resolution, which is at I'll use some numbers to give some context for the compromise here. The continuing resolution funds the government at a rate of $986 billion. Now, originally, when President Obama first took office, his plan for 2014 was to spend a little more than $1.2 trillion. So that's over $200 billion more. Now, since then, we've had some rounds of compromise. There actually have been bipartisan compromises, and the Senate budget this year actually reflected that. It was at a level of about $1,058 billion, so $1.05 trillion. And meanwhile, the Ryan budget this year is at $967 billion. So $986 billion, the Senate continuing resolution, is much closer to what the House is calling for than what the Senate originally called for. There's already been a lot of compromise just to keep the government open.
And, Tom, why doesn't Speaker Boehner just call a vote on a clean resolution, raise the debt ceiling, fund the government, and not tie it to delaying or defunding Obamacare?
Well, in other words, why do Republicans not simply surrender? Well, I can understand why some folks think that is the right thing to do. I want to be clear that the strategy of tying the CR to defunding Obamacare, that strategy lasted about 18 hours, and that is no longer what Republicans are calling for. It may have been a fool's errand. There was never any chance that President Obama and Harry Reid were going to toss President Obama's only accomplishment during his 5 years in office over the side. There was never any chance that was going to happen. So you could see that as a fool's errand, or you could see that as opening negotiations with a bigger demand than you were actually willing to compromise for. So I think Republicans, they dealt themselves a weak hand by making that demand. And so I think in these negotiations, it is accurate to say that the Democrats have a stronger hand than the Republicans, because the Republicans dealt themselves a weak hand. On the other hand, what Republicans are asking for right now is eminently reasonable, and I think that you can see that in some of the shifting poll results that we're seeing right now. It is still true that the public blames Republicans right now more than Democrats, but the gap is much smaller than anyone would have expected, and it's much smaller than it was during the last major shutdown in 1995. All the Republicans are asking for right now is a one-year delay in the individual mandate requirement. And they're also asking that Congress remain under Obamacare, which is one of the agreements that was part of Obamacare in the first place. Those are eminently reasonable requests, and those are things that the American people should support.
So what's wrong with that, Harry?
Well, so the issue with the individual mandate is that is a part of health care reform that is central to the bill. And the reason for that is that one of the key parts of health care reform that everybody supports is that you should not be able to deny you should not be denied health insurance if you have a pre-existing condition. Now, if you let just anyone buy health insurance, whether they're healthy or sick, but you don't make everyone buy health insurance, then only sick people will get health insurance, or people will wait till they get sick, and then they'll get health insurance. Premiums will be too high, and no one can afford it. So that's why you need to have an individual mandate. And the Congressional Budget Office says that without the individual mandate next year, 11 million fewer people will have health insurance. So that's why you can't delay the individual mandate. Now, the second part, having previously worked on the Hill, is near and dear to my heart. During the health care reform debate, it was brought up that, hey, if Obamacare is so good, why don't you and your staffs go on it? And Congress said, sure, we do think it's a good law. Now, remember that members of Congress and their staffs, like every other federal employee, the federal government helps them buy health insurance, not because of health care reform, but because they're federal employees and they get employer-provided coverage. The issue here was usually people that are on that get employer-provided coverage don't go to the exchanges to buy health care. That's usually for people that don't get health care through their employer. So the question was, how does their employer, in this case the federal government, still help them buy health insurance just like they always have? And what the Office of Personnel Management said was you can take the amount of money that the federal government would have been giving you to help buy health insurance through the normal program the federal employees use, and you can take that money to the exchange to buy health care. And that's eminently reasonable. What's being proposed now is to say the congressional staff, who, by the way, don't necessarily make very much money, should get no help buying health insurance, unlike any other federal employee. And frankly, I just don't think that's reasonable, and I think it's mean-spirited.
A reaction to that, Tom?
Right on the internal logic of Obamacare, but he's wrong on the politics, as anyone who watches Jon Stewart on The Daily Show should know by now. If you saw Kathleen Sebelius on The Daily Show the other night, you know that this is a losing political argument. The Obama administration, Harry says that the individual mandate going into effect right now is absolutely central to Obamacare. What the American people, I think, want to know is, why was it okay to delay 8 or 9 other provisions of Obamacare that affect politically plugged-in constituencies? Why was it okay to delay parts that affect big business? Why was it okay to give waivers to unions? Why was all of that okay? But the one thing we can't delay is the requirement that individuals either buy up or pay a fine. That's unreasonable, and it's a political loser.
Harry.
Well, it's not the one thing that we can't delay. Remember, we also are not delaying the ability of people to go on an exchange and buy health insurance in a fair marketplace. We're not delaying the subsidies that they get to purchase health insurance. We're not delaying a major expansion of Medicaid, which will go a long way to helping poor people buy health insurance, at least in the states that have chosen to participate. Now, what the health care law allowed was it allowed some regulatory flexibility for the administration as they implemented the law. I mean, there was a recognition that, look, this is a big law. And I think, you know, no one would say, I certainly wouldn't say that it's perfect. I wouldn't say that the rollout of a law this big is going to be perfect. So you can delay some small parts of the law that aren't central to it. But the individual mandate, unlike some of the other things that we were talking about, is central to the law. And, you know, I think that the analogy that I like to use with how the law is rolled out, and it's true that there are problems with the website, and I don't want to downplay those. But, you know, I just downloaded a new operating system for my iPhone, and frankly, it hasn't worked so well so far. And that's a shame. But that doesn't mean that I give up the iPhone. We have to give some time for the administration to get this right. And I think that they will. And I think that it's a shame that there have been some problems with the rollout. But keep in mind that we've been rolling it out now for all of 9 days, and this is a major transformation of healthcare in America. We shouldn't expect it will all be perfect on day one.
We are talking with Harry Stein, who is an Associate Director of Fiscal Policy for the Center for American Progress, and Tom Giovannetti, who is President of the Institute for Policy Innovation, about who's to blame for the stalemate in Washington, the government shutdown. And we're welcoming your questions, we're welcoming your views, and we're welcoming your solutions. What do you want to see happen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Big Question on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Big Question, and our big question today is, which side do you think is mostly to blame for the federal government shutdown? Republicans, Democrats, or both parties equally? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mark in De Pere is with us first. Hello, Mark.
Hello. My answer is the people to blame are us, the voters.
Why?
Well, if you remember the movie that used to be out called War Games, you know, the answer is once you start seeing insanity occurring, it's the idea is not to play at all. And we keep electing people that aren't running the government as a proficient organization that does regular debates to keep their budgets under control, not put us in this situation. And I think we just need to start replacing people until they can figure out they're working for us.
Republicans and Democrats we got to replace.
Both. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, quick react to that. Tom first.
Well, I think Republicans have been doing that for the last several election cycles. There's no question that the constituency that tends to vote Republican right now has decided that the government is too big and it's spending too much money, and they want that reined in. And that is the reason for the rise of Tea Party-flavored candidates who are willing to go to the mat, they're willing to go to the ramparts in order to get spending and in order to get debt under control. We have in this country right now an incredible ideological divide, greater than any time in my political awareness, where, the Democrats want to keep spending more money. President Obama wants to keep spending more money. Even while looking at debt and deficits spiraling out of control, even while taking government spending levels, and this is all pre-sequester, even while taking spending levels to far in excess of their post-World War II average levels, and there's a big political divide, and there's a major political constituency that wants to just keep partying like it's 1999, and there's another political constituency that wants to get this under control, and that leaves very little room for compromise. I'm afraid these last several years of just CRs instead of budgets worked out through the appropriations process is simply a reflection of political reality. There's a great divide in this country, and I think one side has to win and another side has to lose.
And will Republicans lose some if over this issue, Tom, very briefly?
No, I don't think so. I think this is a winning issue for Republicans. Look, there have been 17 government shutdowns since the Carter administration. This is not some sort of sky-is-falling situation. Democrats have shut the government down for Republican presidents before. Republicans have shut the government down for Democratic presidents. Democrats in Congress have even shut the government down for a Democratic president. So the idea of Congress using the power of the purse to enforce its will on an administration is nothing new. It's really nothing new. And I think the media does us a disservice by acting like there's something strange and new going on here and that the world is likely to come to an end, the sky is falling. This is actually more typical than atypical.
So, Harry, what about Mark's sentiment, throw all the bums out?
Well, I think I sympathize with Mark, and certainly I've been frustrated with people that have been elected, Republicans and Democrats both. Let me defend the voters, though, for just a moment. I think it's important to remember that you have in the House of Representatives in particular, in fact, only in the House of Representatives, heavily gerrymandered districts where you have voters that are lumped together in these kind of very specific ways to elect very specific people. And that's created this polarized dynamic where you have, unfortunately, far too many House members who just aren't accountable to independent voters, to moderate voters. And the way that you know that this is a problem specific to the House and specific to gerrymandering rather than a problem of the country in general is to look at the Senate. Now, the Senate is certainly far from an ideal institution, and a lot of its problems come from the filibuster. But the Senate, for all of those problems, has been able to pass a bipartisan immigration bill. They've been able to pass a bipartisan farm bill. They've even been able to pass a continuing resolution that just keeps the government open, just opens the government. They've been able to find those compromises because there are reasonable Republicans and reasonable Democrats who can sit down and work together. And unfortunately, in the House, with the way the districts have been carved up, there just aren't enough members like that anymore. And certainly, it's the voters that put them there, but the voters were put there in a very particular way because of how those districts were drawn.
Yeah, we only have a minute or so before our newscast, and I want to get on the table. Tom, you said that the media is doing a disservice by saying the sky is falling or, you know, over stating the situation with the government shutdown. But what about the debt ceiling? Isn't that a little more serious?
It is a totally empty threat that we could default on our debt. As anyone who knows the laws and as anyone who knows Congress knows, it is simply impossible for us to default on the debt at any time in the near future. There's more than enough cash flow coming into the government to pay the debt service, and there is law on the books that requires the president and the executive branch to pay the debt. Now, they may, in worst-case scenario, they may have to not spend money on some other things in order to pay the debt service, but it is federal law that requires that the debt be paid, and there's 10 times more money coming into the government every month than the amount of debt service. So it's an empty threat to be worried that somehow we're going to default on our debt and cause some sort of an international financial panic.
Well, we'll get Harry Stein to respond to that point after the news. We have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up, talking with two guests from different viewpoints on who is mostly to blame for the government shutdown and the impasse in Washington, D.C. Harry Stein and Tom Giovanetti are our guests. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Big Question on the Ideas Network. President Obama, speaking from the White House yesterday, called on Republicans to vote to reopen the federal government and increase the nation's borrowing limit, saying failure to act would create a significant risk of a very deep recession. The president said he was willing to negotiate with Republicans in broad talks on federal spending, but only after they pass legislation to fund and reopen the government and raise the debt limit. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up now on 7:37 on this Wednesday, October the 9th. We are talking with two guests from different political viewpoints about the latest developments in the shutdown and the showdown in Washington, and asking them and you in today's big question, who's mostly to blame for this, the Republicans or the Democrats? Our guests are Tom Giovanetti. He is president of the Institute for Policy Innovation, a conservative think tank in Dallas, and Harry Stein, an associate director of fiscal policy for the Center for American Progress, a progressive think tank in Washington. He also worked as a legislative assistant to Democratic U.S. Senator Herb Kohl and is a graduate of UW-Madison. Well, just before news, Tom said that the U.S. government is not going to default on its bills, and that this is all scare tactics. Harry Stein, what's your response to that?
Well, I think I'm unfortunately more concerned about breaching the debt limit. First, you know, Tom had mentioned that we may need to stop paying other things, and I think it's important to remember what those other things are. That might be Social Security, that might be paying soldiers, that might be veterans benefits. We would have to cut spending overnight by an estimated 32% overnight if we hit the debt limit and Congress refuses to raise it. And the fact is, we don't know what would and wouldn't get paid. And there's two key things to remember here. One is that we've never breached the debt limit before, so this is uncharted territory. And the second thing is that, you know, Tom is absolutely right that we are legally required to pay our bond interest, but we're also legally required to pay all of the other things that Congress has passed laws requiring payment for. So, for example, Social Security, troop pay, veterans benefits, Medicare, Medicaid, and so forth. All those payments are legally required. And it's very hard to predict whether we'll have enough money or not, because we don't know how much money we'll have on any given day. How much tax revenue happens to come into the government on one day to the next is incredibly hard to predict. And at the same time, those payments that we'd have to pay, things like bond interest, things like Social Security benefits, those tend to go out in chunks. Social Security checks go out at particular times during the month. So there may be some days where we're fine. There will be other days where we're not fine. And we just don't know what obligations we're going to have on those days that we can't pay.
Let's take some more calls who have been waiting. Deb in Plymouth. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is for Tom. If Republicans now all of a sudden have these reasonable arguments against Obamacare. Why have they, I'm sure this has been promoted and allowed, why have they let people like Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, the Fox News team continue to lie about the Affordable Care Act ever since it passed? And I have a follow-up comment.
Well, Deb, I'm not sure. Is it related? Who do you blame? Yeah,
I blame the Republicans because they have allowed these people, and they are, a lot of these people are Republicans, to lie about the Affordable Care Act, and that's how this whole problem got started, was Ted Cruz getting up and talking against the Affordable Care Act.
So maybe Republicans have some scare tactics of their own by misleading people on the Affordable Care Act, Tom. What about that?
Well, I reject categorically the idea that Republicans have been involved in some sort of wholesale campaign to lie, L-I-E, about the Affordable Care Act. Now, we may have differences of opinions about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, and there may have been an occasional person who misspoke or said something inaccurately. That happens on both sides of the aisle. But I don't think there's been a campaign to lie about it. I think there has been a campaign to point out what Republicans don't like about it, and all the polls, every poll shows that the majority of the American people agree with that. That's not to say that I defend the tactic of trying to defund Obamacare through the CR. I think that turned out to be kind of a kamikaze mission, and I do think that there is some room to blame Republican leadership for why they gave in to what they knew was going to be a failing tactic or a failing strategy. I mean, perhaps they decided to go with it simply because they had to appease so much of the pressure they were getting from their constituents. But again, we want our elected leaders to respond to the desires of their constituents. The important thing, I think, to point out is that, as I said earlier, that strategy lasted about 18 hours, and that is no longer what the Republicans are demanding. And I also want to throw out, just as a provocative thought, I truly don't understand why President Obama won't take the deal that Republicans are offering him. I think if the president were as clever as we like to think he is, he would take the deal. The individual mandate, remember, the individual mandate is not the ability to buy subsidized health insurance under Obamacare. The individual mandate is essentially the requirement that people who don't want to buy it still have to buy it. That's what's politically unpopular. If the president were to take this deal, he would appear to be the one who was graciously moving. He would be the one who came up with the way to keep the government open. And everyone who wants to buy Obamacare and get subsidies would still be getting them. It's a long-term strategic win for the president to take this deal. But I think he is just so dug in. I mean, Republicans are dug in, but I think the president is also so dug in that he can't see the victory that is staring him in the face.
Harry Stein.
Well, I think that Tom is absolutely right that the individual mandate is one of the less popular aspects of the law, and that the president is absolutely using up political capital to defend that. Now, I think the reason that he's doing it is, as I said earlier, I think that the individual mandate is a critical underpinning of the law. Remember that 11 million fewer people get health insurance next year, the Congressional Budget Office estimates, if we don't have the individual mandate. And so it's actually not true that everyone who wants health insurance will be able to get it without the mandate. Because remember, the mandate is key to keeping health care costs down. If you don't have an individual mandate, but anyone sick or healthy can buy health insurance, regardless of pre-existing conditions, the concern that health insurance companies rightly have is that healthy people will not buy health insurance. They'll wait until they get sick, and only sick people will buy health insurance. It'll be very expensive to treat them. Premiums will have to go up. And then no one will be able to afford health insurance because it's too expensive. So having the individual mandate, remember, is absolutely important to keeping a functional health insurance market under health care reform where anyone who wants to buy health insurance is able to get it.
Let's take another call from Charlie in Milwaukee. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Joy. Great show as always. I just wanted to say that I blame President Obama. Since he's been elected, he has not been able to bring the country together like he promised. And if you look at the problem is that this Obamacare is a huge entitlement. It will bankrupt the country, and he has done nothing to bring the budget in line with all the entitlements. The longer we wait, the worse the solution is going to be. And at least now you have people in Congress on the Republican side who are acting like adults, saying we can't just get another credit card. We need to stop. We need to have a real focus on how to solve our fiscal problems. And using the CR and using the debt limit, if that's what it's going to take, we got to get things under control at some point.
Yeah, Harry Stein, what's your response to that?
Let's
get Harry's first, and then we'll go to Tom.
Let me throw out a surprising fact here. The deficit right now, annual budget deficits, are falling. They're actually falling at a very fast rate. They're about half the level they were when President Obama took office. Cumulative national debt is also falling right now. The debt is falling right now. Now, that's only going to last for a few more years, and then the growth in healthcare costs, this is mainly actually Medicare, that's an issue, and also the aging of the population, will over the very long term, so we're looking now 20, 30 years down the road, lead to budget deficits that ought to be concerning to people. But actually, even 10 years from now, the national debt is expected to be lower than it is today if we just keep current law in place. So I don't think it's true that President Obama has exploded the national debt. I mean, certainly it's higher than it was when he took office. But remember, we had the worst recession since the Great Depression. And that's not going to be good that's obviously bad for the economy. And, of course, that's going to be bad for budgets as well. I think that, you know, certainly President Obama, you know, I think the people can criticize fairly his tactics in you know, one standoff or the next. But remember that it takes two sides to not negotiate. And I think when President Obama took office during health care reform, there was a lot of effort, if you remember the Gang of Six process with Senator Baucus and Senator Grassley, a Republican and a Democrat, to find some agreement on health care reform. There was a lot of effort to court Senator Snow, a Republican from Maine, who voted for the bill in committee but then didn't on the floor. And I think that, you know, certainly it's fair to say that both sides deserve some share of the blame over the last several years for the failure to compromise. But I think it would be unfair to say they're equally responsible. I think what you've seen is one side, an element of the Republican Party that's unfortunately seems to have taken control of the party, that has refused to negotiate. And you need a partner to negotiate.
Tom, your response to that?
Well, the internal logic of what Harry just said is just mind-boggling. The reason those good things are happening, the reason that the debt and deficits are going down, is because of the sequester. That's a policy that Harry was dramatically opposed to, and that's a policy that was put into place exactly because of the intransigence of the Republicans that he deplores. Look, when President Obama came into office as a conservative, I was terrified because I thought he was going to govern in a reasonably moderate way, that he was going to win over the American people, and he was going to marginalize free market conservatism like I believe in for a generation. But as it turned out, President Obama turned out to be simply a fairly unimaginative leftist, and he exploded spending, he exploded government, debt and deficits skyrocketed, and that's why we're in the political situation we're in today, because a sufficient number of the American people said, no, this is not what we want, and this is not what we intended when we elected this president. That is the explanation for the Tea Party. That is the explanation for the historic change of power in Congress. That's the explanation for the sequester, and that's the explanation for the government shutdown.
Let me get you, Tom, first to respond to Andy on Facebook, who writes, we had negotiation and debate over the Affordable Care Act while it was legislated. Republicans lost that debate, and President Obama signed it into law. Republicans then challenged the law in the Supreme Court, and they lost there as well. Romney ran his presidential campaign on repealing the Affordable Care Act, and he lost. Since then, Republicans in Congress have voted to repeal Obamacare some 40-some times. They lost every vote. Now when it comes time to pay the bills, Republicans shut the government down because they keep losing the debate. They are clearly at fault. And I know they are not, the Republicans aren't insisting on a defunding of Obamacare, but this delay, is this something that really should be tied to funding the government or the debt ceiling?
Well, I agree with the correspondent on Facebook. I would like to say Republicans are responsible rather than Republicans are at fault, because fault implies that you're wrong. And I don't think Republicans are wrong. I think Republicans are using the power of the purse as it was designed and as it was envisioned in the Federalist Papers, that this is a way to put a, an additional layer of control on the executive branch. Where I agree with your correspondent is that the only way Republicans are truly going to undo Obamacare is at the ballot box. It's by taking control of the Senate and by ultimately winning the White House. That's the only way they're going to do it. And I would suggest that had it not been for a few real aberrations in specific political campaigns, the Republicans would be in control of the Senate right now. So to some degree, the Republicans have shot themselves in the foot at the ballot box, or they would be further along in getting rid of Obamacare than they are right now.
Well, a very quick response, Harry, and then we're going to get closing statements from both of you.
Well, I think that Tom is absolutely right, that ultimately, for substantial remaking or undoing, certainly, of health care reform, that Republicans need to make the case to the American people. And that hasn't happened yet. And I think that that's, we absolutely ought to be having negotiations. Those negotiations can include health care reform. I think Democrats would certainly agree that there are places that the law can be improved. Those negotiations shouldn't be happening when the American people are living through one crisis, two crises actually, and facing a third. With one crisis being the shutdown, the second crisis being the sequester, which, by the way, is only one of many deficit reduction policies under the Obama administration, and the third one being the debt limit. Everyone supports ending the government shutdown. Everyone supports, or most people support, raising the debt ceiling. We shouldn't negotiate on things that we agree on. We should just do them. And then let's negotiate. Let's talk through things like health care reform. Let's talk through things like long-term debts and come to some sort of long-term agreement. But we're not going to get to a long-term agreement when we're under a government shutdown and we just need to get things reopened and stop hurting the economy and hurting the American people.
Let me get you both just a minute each. Tell us what you hope will happen in this stalemate and what you think will happen. Tom first.
Well, Joy, I want to be clear about this. I don't think there's any question that Republicans will come to some sort of agreement to avoid an absolute showdown on the debt ceiling. I think that Republican leadership strongly understands that the best thing to do is to go ahead and extend the debt limit. But I think that they have every right to expect some political concessions in exchange for that. I think that's the way our system is designed. And I think the long-term lesson here for people who are interested in long-term lessons is that this kind of instability and this kind of turmoil is what happens when one political party pushes through a major political piece of legislation with no bipartisan support. That's not the best way we do things in this country, and that's how Obamacare was done.
And Harry?
Well, I hope, what I think and hope are actually quite similar. I hope that we just reopen the government and raise the debt limit and then have long-term negotiations about all of these issues. What I think will happen is we will do that, but in doing that, I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of process, and the House Republicans have started to get at this, but they're not nearly there yet. But where we do those things, we reopen the government, we raise the debt limit, and then as part of that legislation, that creates a framework for long-term discussions to make sure that those happen. And as long as that framework goes on without an ongoing crisis, that would be, I think, an acceptable outcome. We should just stop these crises today. And by the way, I think that there are the votes in the House of Representatives to do that. But if there needs to be some sort of thing attached to that, if that's a long-term framework that doesn't have some sort of other crisis built into it, like the sequester, that just brings both sides together to talk, I think that should be acceptable.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both of you for being with us. Harry Stein is the Associate Director of Fiscal Policy for the Center for American Progress, and Tom Giovannetti, President of the Institute for Policy Innovation. You have heard from both sides in this debate. Now it's your turn to sound off on today's big question. Who do you blame for the federal government shutdown and the showdown in Washington. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Time now for you to sound off on today's big question. We'll give you 30 seconds to tell us who you blame for the government shutdown and the showdown. Republicans, Democrats, both. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dave in Menominee, you're first. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Well, I do blame Republicans. They steered us in this direction. They made sure that they steered us in this direction by not going to committee. What's most important, though, I think, is the debt that they're bringing this up. The power of the purse that your guest on the right said happens in the House of Representatives, and it should have been controlled by the House, which is controlled by Republicans. They did not curtail spending in the House. They wait till now to say we're not going to pay for what we already charge.
Thank you, Dave. Gary on Facebook says, both parties can be seen to be responsible for not being able to work together to come up with a budget. The Obama administration, however, is directly and solely responsible for making the shutdown more difficult than it has to be. There is a disturbing contempt for the majority of American citizens, which is becoming more and more apparent. Ron in Rice Lake is with us. Hello, Ron.
It's Rod. I'm from Weyerhaeuserville. I was just going to say I blame the voters. I voted independent this last time around because I truly believe we need a third strong party. And I might say, too, that when I watched after the election, I may have missed it, but when they were talking about all the votes before the finality of it, they never mentioned how many votes Mansky and Stein got. That's who I voted for, independent. They never said a peep about them. That's all they did.
All right, well, we can certainly look that up, but not today. Thanks very much. Jean in Eau Claire. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I strongly blame the Republicans. I've been watching this fiasco from its beginning live every day. And, you know, it's like they're into the power and control issue. People voted for the president on the basis of health care. People are losing their jobs. People over 50 losing their jobs, couldn't get health care. He did this, and they worked on this for the people during the recession when people really needed this consumer protection with their insurance companies. And I think Republicans need to get to work and pass the continuing resolution.
All right, we'll have to leave it there because we don't have time for another sound-off caller. But you can continue voting online. You can go to WPR.org. And you'll see today's big question. So far, 87% of those who voted online blame the Republicans for the federal government shutdown. 6% blame the Democrats. 12% blame both sides. That's so far online on WPR.org. Thanks to Bill Mertens, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Cherry for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.